Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. In today's episode, we have the opportunity to speak with Henry M. Curer, MD, PhD, FACS, CMQ, about the potential to safely omit surgery in a subset of patients with early-stage HER2-positive or triple-negative breast cancer who achieve a pathologic complete response following neoadjuvant systemic therapy. In our conversation, Dr. Curer reviewed the rationale behind a prospective phase 2 clinical trial testing image-guided vacuum-assisted core biopsy to identify patients with no residual disease after neoadjuvant therapy. He outlined the strict technical and eligibility criteria that enabled accurate detection of PCR, including tumor downsizing to less than 2 centimeters and biopsy of at least 12 cores from the tumor bed, and discussed why this biopsy-based approach may be more reliable than standard surgery in detecting residual disease. He also highlighted the broader clinical implications of the findings, noting that patients with biopsy-confirmed PCR may proceed directly to radiotherapy and avoid breast surgery altogether.
So we know for a long time that certain patients have an exceptional response to neoadjuvant systemic therapy. This is a real long time. We knew in the past that ER-negative tumors had a high response than with HER2 additional and specific anti-HER2 new therapy. So for triple-negative breast cancer and HER2-positive breast cancer, the complete pathologic response now, even without immunotherapy, is around 60%. So we needed to figure out a way to identify those patients safely so we could avoid that surgery. People say, well, a lumpectomy is not a big deal. It's an hour and a half, 2 hours, sentinel node. Why even do this? Because I don't really believe that those patients without any residual disease will benefit from the surgery. So we had to figure out a way to identify them. And the problem was that our imaging, our best imaging, including mammogram, ultrasound, and breast MRI, most of the time overestimates, but can also underestimate disease. So we designed an inaugural method to select patients with highly strict eligibility as well as technical standards to actually, after the chemo, biopsy it under direct imaging with what's called a vacuum-assisted core biopsy. And we demonstrated in our Annals of Surgery trial publication in 2018 that we could do that with an accuracy of 98%. I will tell you up front here that a lot of studies have been done which show a much higher false negative rate. And the problem with those studies is their inadequate sampling and selection criteria. So we use a vacuum-assisted core biopsy. Many people, medical oncologists, even some surgeons and radiation oncologists don't know, but you can, under image guidance, use this one stick to the area of the tumor bed, and the radiologist can carefully move around the tumor bed and sample tiny portions of tissue. And we found in our initial foundation study that we needed to remove about 12 portions of that tissue to get an accurate assessment of residual disease. Another issue is there is concern about the false negative rate because, you know, we have these great systemic therapies that can be given to patients after if they have residual disease to increase disease-free survival. So we believe that sampling of this methodology that is under direct imaging with very strict histological assessment, very ultra histology of all the tissue that's removed is probably more accurate than standard surgery. We think, oh, standard surgery, margin assessment, that the false negative zero, but whenever we do very classic studies and we take more margins or shaves, they call it, or go back and take more tissue, it's about 19%, or the range actually is around 8 to 19% of the time there is more disease found. So we believe that this methodology for detection of residual disease is probably more accurate. So patients in this inaugural clinical trial to test the hypothesis that we could accurately, not only accurately identify which patients had no residual disease, that is a complete pathologic, complete pathologic response, we were testing the hypothesis that if there is no residual disease detected, we could just move on to standard radiotherapy without the surgery because it would be kind of redundant. Why remove breast tissue and sometimes even breasts if there's no disease? Key here is that we determined that we only involved patients with tumors that were less than 5 centimeters, HER2-new positive, triple negative breast cancers, but they had to shrink down on breast imaging. By the way, we only used mammogram and ultrasound in this trial. It had to shrink down to less than 2 centimeters, and we had to assess the tumor bed with at least 12 portions of tissue using a 9-gauge vacuum-assisted core biopsy. And as I mentioned, the other studies did not utilize that technique, which resulted in high false negative rates. So for this trial, we not only those patients who didn't have any residual disease on the vacuum-assisted core biopsy did not have surgery. We followed them every 6 months with imaging and physical exams. And the patients there were 50 patients total in the study, and a small high risk, potentially high reward phase 2 clinical trial is designed to assess safety and efficacy, which we assessed in this clinical trial, with the primary outcome being in breast local recurrence or ipsilateral breast tumor recurrence. Patients, of course, if there was residual disease, had their standard surgery, I should say that. At our 5-year analysis, the clinical trial demonstrated that this new paradigm for the management of highly selected patients with HER2-new positive and triple negative breast cancer is both safe and effective because there were no local recurrences, with 100% ipsilateral breast tumor recurrence-free survival, as well as 100% disease-free survival and overall survival. Patients on this study were followed very carefully for safety and efficacy. So for the only really different thing here was adding the biopsy after the neoadjuvant systemic therapy. And you know, you think if you're going to be doing these core biopsies that you're going to have at least one hematoma out of 50 patients, but we didn't have that. There was actually 2 grade 1 toxicities. One patient had some nausea, not vomiting, but nausea during the procedure, and one patient actually had a problem with the vacuum-assisted device, and it required 2 sticks instead of the 1 stick in all the other 50 patients. I should mention that patients in this trial actually received whole breast hyperfractionated radiotherapy with the boost to the tumor bed, and patients with clinically node-negative disease, which were the majority, did not have any direct treatment of the lymph nodes, and those patients, 75% of the study, who were clinically N0, only had tangents of their axillary region. So 75% had no breast surgery or axillary surgery. There's a lot of controversy when we are challenging the standard for 125 years of surgery as being the primacy of treatment for invasive breast cancer. So there is in randomized trials, we like to have this thing called equipoise. That is, the doctors just don't know if one is better than the not. So with this new paradigm for treatment, that is skipping the surgery, there is definitely not equipoise. And, you know, for this type of trial that is testing something new, we're very fortunate that there were no recurrences at all, because the treatments are very good, of course, for these patients with systemic therapy, surgery, and radiotherapy. So we were delighted that there were no recurrences. So this is kind of something that we cannot ignore. We must test it further. And I think it's possible almost in every type of breast practice across the U.S. You know, like I mentioned, we didn't even use MRI. We're not against the use of breast MRI. It's just that it wasn't required for the eligibility or standardization of eligibility or the biopsy procedure, which majority of them were done by image-guided stereotactic biopsy. I think one of the key interests for patients. You know, they're part of this new paradigm for treatment. Are they going to be worried that they didn't have the surgery? So a big component of this clinical trial, which was run by our statisticians and my colleague, Dr. Helen Johnson, was the patient-reported outcomes. So there was a very high comfort, which increased over time, over the 5 years, for patients participating. Number one, they didn't notice any significant differences between the breast that had the cancer or not, except that one with radiotherapy at one point. One had radiotherapy, the other didn't. And there was a high quality of life at baseline participating, as well as increase over the five-year period. So the patients did well on the quality of life side. There's been a lot of interest in maybe we can identify patients at higher risk if we measure circulating tumor cells or ctDNA. And one of our endpoints was to measure or compare the outcome of patients based on a few patients who had, there were a few in the trial, five had circulating tumor cells, and there were two patients who had, at some time point, we measured at several time points, had TP53, actually two patients, one of them cleared. The issue is, we didn't have any recurrence, local or distant, so we cannot say anything about the role of this, but we will follow. We have consented the patients now to follow them over 10 years. So I mentioned, you know, what's the next step? We always have the gold standard of a randomized clinical trial. The issue with randomization in something like this, a highly technical, highly selected, particularly that we showed such a high efficacy on excellent oncological outcomes, would be hard for a patient, for example, if you biopsied and told them that there is no cancer, for them to be willing to go to surgery versus not. We've had a historical experience with local therapy, radiotherapy, or surgery. When we're randomizing, it's really hard. There was some success in a trial called the COMET trial for DCIS, where there was a randomization, but the patients got to, you know, they have intent to treat and what they actually got. So at least the patient had some autonomy as to what her treatment was. That might be possible, but there isn't equipoise. There is definitely concern, well, this might not be safe. So one method is, and my colleagues in Korea, Dr. Lee has a multi-center trial, very similar to the MD Anderson multi-center study, where they do the biopsy and they're going to follow the patient, just one arm, single arm. I've had some interest by cooperative groups to potentially do this study at a national level as well. Again, this is the inaugural trial where we utilize this image-guided vacuum-assisted core biopsy. Although it's a pioneering study, there's only one. Like I said, it was a home run for a small phase two trial, no recurrences at 5 years, which says a lot for those particular subtypes that we weren't missing disease. When you have such a success in a small, very small phase two trial, the next question, I believe, is to test it in a lot more patients and not necessarily go on to a randomized trial, because I think if we had a lot of patients and a very, very low recurrence for local regional control in this scenario, that would be enough to change clinical practice, because we very, very well know how these patients do when there's no residual disease left. So we need to test this concept using identical techniques with the same eligibility and this highly technical standardized technique must be done that way. We can't suddenly say, well, let's just have tumors that are 5 centimeters and we'll randomly do 4 or 6 biopsies of that area. No, it was a success because we had to have the patient's tumor by all imaging abnormalities get down to less than 2 centimeters, and by sampling 12 portions of the tissue with a 9-gauge needle, it was accurate and there's no recurrences. So the next stage, I think, before a randomized trial. Actually, I don't think this patients will agree to a randomized trial, but I think the next stage is to have several larger phase two studies showing that this indeed is safe and effective, which I believe can be done anywhere in the United States, because anywhere where they're doing breast cancer surgery, you need mammograms and ultrasound. It's interesting. We also, you know, ER-positive breast cancers are very common, you know. So we said, hey, why don't we just do luminal cancers as well, these ER-positive cancers, and let's choose them by having a very high Ki-67. You know, they're dividing. They're more likely to respond to chemotherapy if indicated, that is node positive and younger patients. But we found that we looked at those in the MD Anderson database, and it was only like 6%. So it would require like 20 patients to be part of it to select those who might not need the surgery. So we chose her to do positive and triple negative breast cancer because of that high pathologic response rate. And, you know, people say, well, you know, this new paradigm for the management, there's only, you know, 37% triple negative and HER2 positive early breast cancers. But if we look at that in the whole world, that's about 650,000 women every year. So yes, it's HER2 positive triple negative breast cancers are not as common as pure estrogen receptor positive luminal cancers, but it's a significant number of patients. I really have a strong belief and faith that this will become a standard for patients integrated into our normal clinical practice, because they're going to be getting the systemic therapies anyway. The responses are getting more, and our techniques for evaluating are really excellent.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.